The following program, The Russ Belleville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belleville Show are their own, and The Russ Belleville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Prohibition Opposition Television Network, brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot. Yeah!
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Prohibition Opposition Television Network presents The Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Ah, yeah, welcome back, everyone. You guys have yourselves a good time while I was gone. I had an interesting 3 weeks. I don't know about you, but welcome to the show. So glad to have you here. We have got a great show to start, to debut for you today on June 4th, 2012. It's just got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and we're really excited for everyone to be here. First of all, let's welcome from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, our own senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie.
Hello. Nice. I love the intro. Sounded vaguely familiar. I'm very happy with that.
There's going to be a lot of familiar things for people here that are were used to my previous show. Not a whole lot of changes. One change, we're going to switch up the news just a little bit. We're going to give you all the headlines right back to back, and then we're going to talk about them afterwards. So Carrie takes care of that in what's now called the Daily Cannabis Chronicle. What's in our headlines today, Carrie?
Well, today in our headlines, we're going to talk about some big news that broke while we were on break for a little while. We're going to talk about the political race down in Texas that made a lot of headline news. Also, we're going to talk about New York and what they've done with their decrim law. And also, we've got our newest state was signed in to legislation that made it the 17th medical marijuana state. We're going to talk about that first up on the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
All right. That's fantastic news to start our show with. I'm so happy about that. Also joining us here in the studio, we've got the pirate Ganja John hanging out here.
What's up, Russ? I missed you, buddy.
I missed you too. Did you, anything interesting happen these 3 weeks for you?
Yeah.
Me too.
A lot of things.
We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Also, we got Wiz Calico hanging out here in the studio. How are you doing, Calico?
Hey, quite well. Aloha, everybody. Glad to be back.
Trying to reset all the levels here. Some of the levels are off.
We will get that worked out.
But we'll get it all worked out. And Calico, you've been hard at work trying to get marijuana legalized, I understand?
As always, my friend. And we're going to do it in November. And we're going to be there on the Russ Belleville Show to cover it.
All right. Also, we've got Brian the Red, our engineer, is here in the studio today.
Howdy, howdy.
With the Pink Leaf Project as well. So glad to see you here. So everyone, stay tuned. We've got a great show coming up for you today. First off, we're going to be having our... Daily Cannabis Chronicle. I have to remember to say things differently now. So many habits I have to break. The Daily Cannabis Chronicle coming up next after this first break. Then we've got our Daily Toker Tunes. It's Roots Monday, and we'll bring up some great reefer jazz for you. Then we've got our first guest, our debut guest here in the studio, Paul Stanford, the CEO and founder of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation. He was just profiled in the news today with a new tax lien, $2.7 million tax lien estimated against the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation. We'll ask him all about that, and he is the chief petitioner of the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. That's cannabistaxact.org, one of two initiatives that has a very good chance of making the ballot to legalize marijuana here in the state of Oregon. And then we'll wind things up with a radical rant. I'll tell you what I've been up to and what my plans are for the future. So stick around. It's the Russ Belleville Show.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belleville Show.
Dear Mom, when I was in college, I used to drink a lot. It was kind of crazy. But now that I'm older, I prefer to use marijuana. It's less harmful to my body, I don't get hungover, and honestly, I feel safer around marijuana users. I hope this makes sense. But if not, let's talk. I love you.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
And this is your Daily Cannabis Chronicle for Monday, June 4th. With the stroke of a pen, Connecticut State Governor Daniel Malloy signed legislation into law last Friday that would make medical marijuana legal in the state of Connecticut. Governor Malloy's signature was the last stop for the medical marijuana law, making Connecticut the 17th state to legally recognize marijuana as a medical treatment. Although the individual state laws and availability of medical marijuana varies greatly between those 17 states. While signing the bill, Governor Malloy said that patients with chronic diseases will no longer be denied the benefits of medical marijuana, adding that with careful regulation and safeguards, the law would allow a doctor and a patient to decide what is in the patient's best interest. The statewide effort to get the medical marijuana bill passed was after voters in the state made tens of thousands of phone calls, wrote letters, and had meetings with legislators. Patients and doctors reached out to the state lawmakers, asking them to pass this law. In the end, the Senate voted 21-13 to approve the bill to legalize medical marijuana after a contentious 10-hour debate after the House had passed the bill 91-56 in April. The law will now go into effect on October 1st. Now, here are some specifics of the law. First, to qualify, you need to be certified by a physician of having cancer, glaucoma, HIV, AIDS, Parkinson's disease, MS, damage to the nervous tissue of the spinal cord with objective neurological indication of intractable spasticity, epilepsy, cachexia and wasting syndrome, Crohn's disease, and post-traumatic stress disorder. The Department of Consumer Protection, along with an 8-member board of physicians, is to be established, and that board also has the authority to qualify any medical condition for the program if they review the case and deem the patient eligible. The major drawback, the new Connecticut law does not allow for any home grows, meaning that the marijuana a patient receives must come from a dispensary where only a pharmacist can dispense the medical marijuana to the registered patient. You have to be 18. You cannot qualify if you are in state custody, so prisoners can't qualify for the program. And there will be primary caregivers. They can be assigned by the patient as long as they have never had a controlled substance violation, and that person can also obtain and possess medical cannabis for the purpose of providing it to their registered patients. Doctors are barred from any financial gain in a dispensary business, and if you want to grow cannabis for the state, you're going to have to pay the $25,000 fee to be licensed to cultivate marijuana and to distribute it to a dispensary. That license will have to be renewed every 5 years. Now, the state is required to have at least 3 dispensaries, but it won't have any more than 10. Health insurers don't have to pay for medical marijuana, stated in the bill, and the gray area that was left in the legislation comes from the quantities that a patient can have. As a patient, you are allowed to have on hand a 1-month supply. Those guidelines will be reached by the physician filling out the registration form. Landlords, employers, and schools can't discriminate against you if you are a medical marijuana patient. Now, this is the second time that lawmakers have passed a medical marijuana bill in Connecticut. They passed one in 2007, but then Governor Jody Rell vetoed it. Last year, Governor Malloy backed a medical marijuana bill that would have allowed patients to grow their own marijuana, but it was voted down in the House. So congratulations to the nation's 17th, with an asterisk, medical marijuana law. And sadly, the first major American city to decriminalize marijuana back in the 70s is also the marijuana arrest capital of the world today. New York City has an ugly history of arresting people for small amounts of marijuana in the decriminalized city by stopping them and asking them to empty their pockets. The practice has become known as the stop and frisk, and its practice has led to an overwhelmingly racist crime statistic in the Big Apple. Today, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced legislation that would lower those small possession arrest rates by lowering the penalty of having marijuana in public view from a misdemeanor to a non-criminal offense. Currently, first-time offenders carrying less than 25 grams of marijuana are supposed to be issued a non-criminal violation ticket with a fine. But those that are openly displaying marijuana can be arrested on a marijuana in public view charge, a criminal misdemeanor. But disproportionately, young men of color in high crime areas of the city are being routinely arrested following the stop and frisk practices by police that turn up any small amounts of marijuana in their pockets. Last year, citizen protests over the practice were staged in front of the mayor's home. The city council demanded the practice be stopped because of the racist undertones of the arrest statistics. At the time, Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly, with the blessing of the mayor, made the order to stand down on the stop and frisk policies. Now, that was in September. Since then, a citizen watchdog group, the Bronx Defender, actually showed that the stand down order was largely ignored and that illegal stops and wrongful marijuana arrests actually increased in the months of October and November, directly following that order to stand down. Their study of marijuana arrests showed that 41% of those arrested for small marijuana possession had had their rights violated. Now, in 145, just out of 184 of those arrests for small amount marijuana possession in the Bronx during those months, the marijuana that was brought into public view as a result of the intrusive physical search by a police officer rather than the arrested citizen. Now, those arrests turn up in any background searches by employers, colleges, and landlords. In 1990, there were only about 2,000 low-level marijuana arrests each year in the city. In 2011, there were more than 50,000 arrests. That is, one out of every seven arrests is for a small amount of marijuana. Como called the move to lower the penalty long over overdue and said it would address a blatant inconsistency in the way the city has dealt with small amounts of marijuana possession. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Kelly both expressed support for the governor's plan announced today. Mayor Bloomberg, who once defended the practice as a way to deter more serious crimes, said that the governor's proposal strikes the right balance. But now, before you light up in celebration in the Big Apple, you will still be arrested for smoking and marijuana in public. So please be careful. And another big story that happened while we were on break, the not-so-marijuana-friendly state of Texas has elected to run a very marijuana-friendly politician to represent them in Congress for their 16th district, an area that includes El Paso and has a population of over 650,000 Texans. Robert Francis, also known as Beto O'Rourke, was elected last Tuesday in Texas, beating out an eight-term incumbent, Sylvester Reyes, who is a former U.S. Border Patrol head honcho. The heavily Democratic district will most likely give O'Rourke the win come November in the general election. Now, the battle between O'Rourke and Reyes began back in 2009 when O'Rourke was serving on the El Paso City Council. The council was discussing solutions to the drug war violence in El Paso's sister city on the Mexican side of the border, Juarez, a city that we have been covering horrific drug gang killings for years now. O'Rourke convinced the council in 2009 to unanimously pass a resolution calling for national leaders to conduct a serious debate on drug legalization as a possible way to end the drug war violence. Now, at the time, O'Rourke said to the council, quote, "We know the war on drugs is empowering the drug lords and is costing us millions of dollars. Let's start an honest national debate that would end the prohibition of narcotics." Now, he also said in that debate that if you live on the border, you see that the old drug war emperor has no clothes. The resolution was really just a gesture from the city that sees firsthand border violence, and it was only asking leaders to consider a debate on the issue. But the mayor of El Paso, John Cook, along with Congressman Reyes, went on an all-out campaign to discredit the resolution. The mayor immediately vetoed it, saying it was unrealistic to believe that the U.S. Congress would ever seriously consider any debate on legalizing narcotics. Reyes said that the resolution may result in a termination of federal funds to El Paso, a message that caused four city council members to sustain the mayor's veto of the resolution. Now, while marijuana wasn't the only issue in the debate between the two Democrats, it definitely was the most defining. Now, in the tense situation in the city across the river in Mexico, Juarez has a murder rate of almost 200 per 100,000 people, the world's most dangerous. The citizens of El Paso are keenly aware that the violence stems from drugs, mostly marijuana, that comes across the river from Mexico into the U.S., and all those weapons are purchased with the billions of dollars the drug cartels earn by selling an illegal commodity in our country. This is just the latest in an upset of elections that can be traced to the candidates' pro-marijuana stances, as opposed to their opponents' anti-marijuana stance. Just last month, Ellen Rosenblum won the Democratic nomination for Attorney General, defeating Dwight Holton in Oregon, who was favored to win and had the support of state law enforcement for his get tough on drug crime stance. Now, these races are only the beginning of an election year season where marijuana has finally surfaced in at least some of them as a major point of discussion. And this is Carrie Gallagher for the Russ Belville Show, and that is your news today for Monday, June 4th on the Daily Cannabis Chronicles.
All
All right. Thank you for the news, Carrie. And just to discuss a couple of these stories here. First of all, great news on the Beto O'Rourke story. The guy who was running against him, that Congressman Reyes, he was actually running an ad that had "Say no to drugs, say no to Beto." Right? like they were trying, he was trying to scare everybody that electing this guy would be electing some crazy drug-crazed hippie or something. I mean, they even went back to the 90s to dig into Beto O'Rourke's past, you know, to some of the charges he'd had in the past and some situations that he'd had that long ago dealt with, and it didn't work because people are beginning to realize that, like you said, the emperor wears no clothes, that these drug laws are not working, and the people that continue to try to scare us with this tough on drugs approach are not going to get anywhere with it any longer. Carrie mentioned Ellen Rosenblum winning the attorney general here in Oregon. We can go 2 years before that to the race between Steve Cooley and Kamala Harris when she won a very, very tight race. And it's been thought that it's the Not Cooley campaign that was run by medical marijuana supporters that helped to drag him down to the point where he could be beaten. So this is, you know, great news, and it once again shows that Democrats, at least, can't build their political resume by stepping all over marijuana consumers and medical marijuana laws. Now, to the story on Bloomberg and Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Cuomo there in the state of New York, this comes on the heels of a story that you may have seen it over this past week, where the mayor, Bloomberg of New York, is calling for an end to sugared sodas. To putting sugared sodas into in large quantities, right? So, like, they want to make it in restaurants and in these other places in New York, delis and such, that you can't get any more than a 16-ounce soda. And it just, to me, this just shows how Mayor Bloomberg doesn't have the right point of view when it comes to not just that issue, the obesity issue, but with the drug war issue as well. It's always this idea that we somehow need to stop people from doing something, that we need to be the nanny state, that we need to have these severe restrictions to force people to do things that are good for them, and it's never going to work. It never has worked. It's never going to work. These stop and frisks that they're doing in New York City is something that they've been trying to stop. That police commissioner Kelly, he issued an edict there that they would stop using stop and frisk. And it hasn't worked. This is a culture that needs to be changed. You can't just change a couple of the rules here and there or make a couple of pronouncements here and there. This is a culture of policing that owes all the way back to just the prohibition of marijuana, the treatment of cannabis consumers as if they're some sort of criminals and as if the government needs some sort of reason to stop them from using cannabis. It's turned New York City into the arrest capital of the world in the middle of a state that is decriminalized marijuana. It's just insane. And finally, the good news in Connecticut with their medical marijuana law, let's also not forget that they passed decriminalization the year before. So we are seeing change, even in the East Coast, in the New England states here. Connecticut is got their decrim in medical marijuana. We've got New Hampshire moving forward with medical marijuana provisions. Rhode Island is looking at decriminalization now. New Jersey, even the state of New Jersey, the no garden state, is looking at a decriminalization statute. So this can happen everywhere. And if you want to get involved, you can get involved with us by joining the National Cannabis Coalition. Check them out at nationalcannabiscoalition.com and help us raise some money. If you want to keep this show on the air, keep it sponsored by National Cannabis Coalition, you need to show them how important it is to you. You can text NCC to 420-420, or you can text Russ to 420-420. If you can do both, do both. It sends $10 per text, but if you can only do one, send Russ to 420-420. As they tally that up, they'll get an idea of just how popular this show is. And believe me, all the money that we raise, and I can say this honestly, all the money that we raise through that text messaging, through our sponsorship on the website, through our advertisements, all of that money is coming back to the show. And we are going to be bringing you all sorts of great coverage here on the Russ Belville Show. Starting in just 2 weeks, on June 16th, we're going to be covering the Oregon Green Free Care Growers Cup. So check that out on Saturday. We'll be live streaming it here right at RadicalRust.com. And then the weekend after that is the San Francisco Medical Cannabis Cup by High Times. We're going to make our way down there, drive our way down there, bring some cameras, and bring you as much live streaming coverage of the Cannabis Cup as we can. Coming in July, I'll be in Pomeroy, Ohio at the Starwood Festival. We'll be live streaming from there. And in August, from Seattle Hemp Fest with the backstage passes and all the good times right here at RadicalRust.com. So check that out. Check out RadicalRust.com on the web and check out our Facebook, The Russ Belville Show on Facebook. Let's make this happen. Let's make this most popular marijuana show on the web and show everyone that it's 420 here at The Russ Belville Show.
Hey, Russ, what do you think about a break, buddy?
It's 420 back in Idaho where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support The Russ Belville Show.
Coming a little quick on that one.
Guess so.
Newly cut stuff.
New
we're going to have to figure out all this stuff. When we can talk, when we can't. But we'll be right back with your Roots Monday Daily Toker Tune. So stick around. It's The Russ Belville Show.
South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
The Cure with Georgia and Amy. Responsible talk about ending prohibition. Courtesy of iCannabisRadio.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. And we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your daily Toker Tunes.
All right, everybody, welcome back. And here on this debut show for the Russ Belville Show, I wanted to open up with some reefer jazz that's near and dear to my heart. Those of you who know me really well know that while in the 21st century I've been a marijuana law reformer, in the 20th century I was a club musician. I played bass guitar in various bands, and I played even stand-up bass in swing bands and jazz bands. So the music of the reefer jazz era is something that really appeals to me. I always loved those big bands with the horns and the conductors up front, and there was no better one than the man you just heard in our intro, Cab Calloway. The great Cab Calloway is someone who is known to everybody who is fans of blues and jazz. I first experienced Cab Calloway as a kid, believe it or not, from the Blues Brothers movie. That was the first experience I'd ever had with Cab Calloway. He, of course, played the blues man in that movie who cared for Jake and Elwood Blues and did his famous song, Minnie the Moocher, with the Blues Brothers band. I also wanted to bring this up because while I was on extended break, one of my heroes passed away, Donald Duck Dunn. He was the bass player for that Blues Brothers band, but of course, more famously, the bass player for just about every one of those Motown, Stax, Volt, you know, old-time songs that made up the sound that turned into rock and roll. So and soul music, for that matter. So this one goes out to Donald Duck Dunn, of course, not playing on this particular track. track, but played with Cab Calloway and the Blues Brothers Band. And of course, Cab Calloway himself, who brought us so much great reefer jazz and pretty much brought this culture to the mainstream so long ago. So we're going to bring you his most famous hit. This is Cab Calloway and his orchestra with Minnie the Moocher on the Russ Belleville Show. Check out music.radicalrust.com to get your downloads.
A red-hot hoochie-coocher. She was the roughest of his frail, but Minnie had a heart as big as a whale. Ho-dee-ho, ho-dee-ho,
ho-dee-ho, ho-dee-ho,
hi-dee-hi, hi-dee-hi,
hi-dee-hi, hi-dee-hi,
hey-dee, 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 hey. Loved him, though he was cocky. He took her down to Chinatown, and he showed her how to kick the gong around. Hey, hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey,
oi, 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 oi,
oi, oi, oi, oi,
oi, oi, oi, oi, oi, she was needing. He gave her a home built of gold and steel, a diamond car with the platinum wheels. Hadi, 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 hadi,
hadi, hadi, hadi, hadi,
hadi, hadi, hadi, hadi,
hadi,
hadi, hadi, hadi,
hadi, hadi, hadi, hadi,
was a dozen courses. She had $1 million worth of nickels and dimes.
And what did she do?
She sat around and counted them all 1,000,000 times. Ha, dee, ha, dee, ha.
Ha, dee, ha, dee, ha.
To admit to having used marijuana in the past. And they want us to go around and ask each of you. Senator Kerry, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Senator Edwards?
Yes.
Senator Lieber?
Well, you know, I have a reputation for giving unpopular answers at Democratic debates. I never used marijuana. Sorry.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Senator.
Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine. Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine.
Ganja John, freaking out stoner comedian since 2011.
Everything they tell you about pot is a lie. Tell you pot smoking makes you unmotivated, a lie. When you're high, you can do everything you normally do just as well. You just realize it's not worth the fucking effort.
Yeah.
Sure, I could get up at dawn, get in traffic, go to a job I hate that does not inspire me creatively whatsoever for the rest of my life. I could do that. Sure.
Or I can sleep till noon. Get up and learn how to play the sitar.
What is it, one string? How fucking hard is this instrument? It'd be a better world. The world of sitar players calling the fucking aliens from the fifth dimension to join us.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
The cannabis community includes a diverse set of activists and nonprofits working to end the prohibition of marijuana. We take the time to hear the stories of reform on the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Community Chat.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Joining us here for our debut episode, we have the owner, founder of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation from here in Portland, Oregon. Paul Stanford's on the line with us. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome back to the ether out here. Russ.
It's been a little weird being away from cyberspace for 3 weeks, but thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Well, Paul, I wanted to talk to you about a few things. First of all, we've got the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, OCTA, which people can find at cannabistaxact.org. We've been reporting on this, working to get the signatures to make the ballot, and I just wanted to give you a chance to give people an update on what are the chances that Oregon will be voting on legalization this year.
There is an excellent chance this year. Right now, we're at about 120,000 total signatures. We need to turn in at least 87,000 valid registered Oregon voter signatures by July 6th to qualify for a vote. So we're over the minimum number of signatures. We're at about 135%. We figure we need to get it up to 140 or 150,000 to ensure that we qualify. So we're right in the process of the last month of our petition drive. We're going strong, gathering about 10,000 signatures a week, and we're very confident that we're going to make the ballot with the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act this year.
Now, when you you did the early turn-in, and for folks that don't know about how Oregon statutes work, we can turn in the as many signatures as we've got by a certain date. You know, I think it was 90 days before or 60 days, something like that. And then they can count those up and give us an idea what the validity is before we turn in on the final date of July 6th. Has there been any report back on the initial validity of the signatures you've turned in?
No, we have not got a report back. I've told they're in the process of going through the sheets and numbering them and getting the data entered to start the validation process. We were the third initiative to turn in this year and meet that minimum requirement, the requirement that we turn in at least the minimum number of signatures to qualify for our statutory measure here in the state of Oregon. That's 87,213. And so we had to have those turned in by the 25th, so we turned in a total of 108,000, or about 21,000 more than the minimum number needed to start that early validation process. Mm-hmm. I did get an email from the Secretary of State's office saying they were going to start they'd gone through and finished numbering the sheets and everything. They're going to start the validation process today.
Okay. Now, currently in Oregon, we've actually got two different initiatives that are working to legalize, of course, the Cannabis Tax Act that you're working on. And then there's another group that's put together a constitutional amendment that is kind of just a right to smoke or to use cannabis. With two of these initiatives out gathering signatures, do you worry that the spoilage or the validation rate might not be as high as it might have been with just one initiative because of possible double signatures?
Yeah, well, you know, we do worry about duplications. Our signature gathering process has been going on for some time, and, you know, it's difficult for petition signers to differentiate between the two, but, you know, ours was initiative number 9, and they're numbered sequentially, where the other one's 24. So we weren't asked about working together with the other campaign, and we've been trying to do that, but and the fact of the matter is the other initiative would complement ours, since ours is a statutory measure that would go into Oregon's laws, the Oregon Revised Code, and the other initiative is a constitutional amendment that would be added to Oregon's Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping both of them will qualify, both of them will pass, which would put Oregon far ahead of any other state. You know, there are two other states that are already qualified for a vote for cannabis legalization this year, in Colorado and Washington. So we're hoping that Oregon will join the fray here. We should know by before the end of July.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting bringing up Colorado and Washington. Colorado's is an amendment, and Washington's is statutory. And here in Oregon, we got both. So it's kind of an interesting situation. Should both of these initiatives make the ballot, the constitutional amendment and the OCTA, do you then worry about the division of fundraising and volunteers and resources to try to get either of them passed? Or will there be a coordination in effort?
You know, I met with a fellow who's involved with the campaign last week, Jeff Sugarman, to talk about coordinating our campaign, but I haven't heard anything back from that meeting yet. Certainly it is a worry, but with both of them focused on the same subject, I think working together will be crucial.
Okay. We're speaking with Paul Stanford, the owner and founder of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, probably the nation's largest chain of clinics that are helping people get medical cannabis recommendations. How many states are you in right now, Paul, and how many people do you estimate you've helped get a recommendation?
We're in about 9 states, and we've helped a total of a little over 150,000 people, about 80,000 in the past year. Mm-hmm. And so we're stretched right now from Michigan to Hawaii and many places in between.
That's fantastic. And as you operate these clinics in different states, I imagine the different laws in each of the states can make the business kind of difficult. What are some of the things that you have to deal with from different medical marijuana states that perhaps a regular, you know, guy running a, I don't know, McDonald's franchise or something doesn't have to worry about?
Well, it's a lot different from a fast food place, I bet. But one of the things we worry about are the different state agencies that we have to deal with. For instance, in Hawaii, we have to deal with the narcotics police to issue the permit. And the doctor has to turn the application into the state, and they send the permit to the doctor, and the doctor has to sign it and turn it in. Most other states handle it through the health department, but in the state of Nevada, it's a 3-part process where first the patient has to purchase the application and then jump through the hoops to get fingerprints and a doctor's signature and notarize some forms. Then they turn in that application to the state. Then the state sends a letter back that the patient has to take to the DMV and pay a third fee. Jeez. To get the medical permit. And so in Oregon and Michigan and Colorado, there's simply one fee that you pay to the state, and then they issue a permit. When you go to Washington and California, there is no state fee or no state registry. It's just the doctor's authorization that is the permit. So there's different rules that we have to abide by in each different state and make certain that we meet all medical standards of practice across all those states.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're speaking with Paul Stanford from Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, and there was news that broke today, came across from a, well, I saw it reported by a website called The Daily, but this is, they're reporting an IRS lien against Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, claiming that you owe $2.7 million in unpaid income, foundation, and payroll taxes from as long ago as 2004 on assets in Detroit, Seattle, and Oakland. This according to the IRS. I just want to give you the chance to comment on those allegations and let us know what's going on.
We have a payment plan with the IRS, and we should have those completely settled by August.
Okay. But they, as far as what they're claiming, this is
inaccurate, but that's not, I'm not sure exactly how they came up with those numbers, but it's way, way off. That's all I can say.
Now, this isn't like what we're dealing with Stephen D'Angelo, where he's dealing with the IRS 280E codes, is it?
It's somewhat that. You know, we've had a constant state of audit going on with our business since 2005. And so, it's a mess, and there's been a lot of supervision from the IRS, but we think we have that handled at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, you know, it's kind of tough on the Oregon activists at this point, you know, looking at both of the initiatives here to legalize. We've gotten some negative headlines on the constitutional amendment with respect to the largest ever fines for campaign violations as far as signature gathering goes. And now this news coming with Hemp and Cannabis Foundation for the statutory amendment. Do you see this as a witch hunt? Do you see these as politically motivated to try to, you know,
yeah,
take down?
I certainly do. There's no doubt that they're politically motivated. And so, like I said, I expect to have it completely resolved in short order.
Mm-hmm. You know, they also, in this story, they bring up the loss of the THCF's nonprofit status in 2010 and your own issues with tax issues for 2008 and 2009. Given that you're such a high-profile activist and working to do this, do you think maybe being at the head of this just makes you a target that is a little too easy for our opponents?
You know, there is scrutiny at all cannabis-oriented businesses all across the country. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have had a problem with bookkeepers in the past that destroyed all our records and set up phony payroll accounts. And so we had to reorganize our finances, but we're back on sound financial footing.
Well, that's good news. And, you know, from the media side of this, reading through that that article, the way they want to portray it.
Where was this article at? I have not seen it.
This one's called, it's from a website called The Daily Exclusive, and it's at thedaily.com, and their headline is Chronic Deadbeat, which right there, you know, journalistic integrity. But the thing that I've got a problem with in these is that, you know, while you know, this is a news story to report for sure. In reporting it, they also want to go back into the closets and the skeletons from, you know, talking about parking tickets and failure to display a license plate as if, you know, that's any sort of indication of somebody's
that's
character.
Bizarre. No, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to it because it's just ridiculous, and it seems to be muckraking once again, trying to make someone who's of prominence in this community, you know, to take them down a peg or two, and you know, it's just shoddy journalism. So,
well,
I just,
you know, I've been attacked a number of times in the past. You know, the fact that intelligence agencies have assets in the media that publish stories that, you know, various government agencies want come out. And yeah. So it sounds like something along those lines.
Yeah, and meanwhile, while they want to make such a big stink about this, you know, we're talking $2.7 million the IRS claims. Meanwhile, Matt Taibbi over at Rolling Stone has been writing about...
Yeah, that's inflated. That number is way inflated.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how they came up with that.
Whatever the number is, it's so small compared to what we're seeing in the financial sector, with the SEC letting some of these people getting away with $200 million thefts, $11 billion frauds. I mean, it always seems to be they want to pick on the little guys that can't defend themselves as well and let the Bank of America's and Lehman Brothers walk. Any comment on that?
I mean, you know, the banks received this multi-trillion dollar bailout, and we've created hundreds of jobs for people all across the nation. So, I have to look over the facts in that, but I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah. So, Paul, to wind things up here, you know, we're looking at 2012, three states, once we get you on the ballot, three states for the first time ever voting on legalization. What do you think the chances are of getting the trifecta, the triple crown, passing him in all three states? Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be a glorious thing. I don't know exactly what the odds are. But I know we're all working hard to make our initiatives pass. So time will tell, and whether we win or lose in this battle, we're still at it. We're not going away. We're going to keep working until it's legal.
And, yep, and you've been working on this since the 80s. You were working with Jack Herer when he was alive, and Willie Nelson and Gatewood Galbraith and all the giants some of them that we're missing now. So thank you so much for the hard work that you're putting in, the money and the time that you're putting into this, and we'll get this passed for you in 2012. We got to make it happen.
All right. Well, we're working hard at it. So hopefully we'll put this on the ballot and win at the election.
The website. The website is cannabistaxact.org. We've got good polling for the initiative. And if folks want to look you up at the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, how can they get in touch with you?
You can call us at 503-235-4606. One way to get in touch.
All right. Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, thank you so much for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right.
Don't touch that dial. Radical Russ and the Rolla J Studios crew will be right back after these messages. Does internet radio even have a dial? Guys? This is the Russ Belville Show.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Russ Belville. Yeah, he's a scurvy dog.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Monday, June 4th, 2012, and I got a few things to get off my chest. Anything interesting happened to you guys over the past few weeks?
I lost my volunteer job.
Funny, there's a lot of that going along. Yeah. Well, folks, let me get right to it, because a lot of you are probably waiting to find out what the hell happened with Radical Russ and his previous show. And if you saw my last episode, maybe you got some of the flavor of it, but I want to talk just a little bit about it. But before we do, I want to make sure that everyone understands I got nothing but love for my former employer. Got nothing for love for the normal organization. I'm telling you, it's been some of the best moments of my life. I began my activism with the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws on the Global Marijuana March of 2005. And my last event with the one in Dallas was at their Global Marijuana March of 2012. So a full 7 years of my life dedicated to that organization and dedicated to the wisdom and the vision of its founder, Keith Strop, who said, I smoke pot and I like it a lot, and it's none of the government's business if adults use marijuana so long as they don't harm anyone else. And I've always believed that. And I've been working and striving to push that message and to try to use the skills that I've built in the corporate world, being a trainer, being an educator, being a data analyst and a graphic designer. And now, being a talk radio guy, I've been trying to use those things, those tools, for 7 years to help convince people that we need to end adult marijuana prohibition, that marijuana is the safest therapeutically active substance known to man, and the war on drugs is an utter failure, and we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. That's what I've been dedicated to. So please understand that anything that I have done or anything that had happened at the end of my tenure there that had caused any sort of discomfort or disrepute to normal was absolutely not my intention, because everything I've done has been to promote this message, to promote the legalization of marijuana. I officially started working for Normal On January 31st, 2008, pretty easy for me to remember because that was my 40th birthday. And today, I am 44 years, 4 months, and 4 days old. So, basically, I spent the better part of 4 years, 4 months, or actually more accurately, 4.32 years officially working for Normal, you know, being a salaried employee, putting together the podcast and then the live show and then the network, and also doing the chapter outreach duties. So 4.32 years, some of the best years of my life, and they cannot be wiped away just because I had 0.0005 bad years. Two really, really bad days. But let me get right to it, what the whole situation is here, just so, you know, I have this, I got to maintain this relationship with the fans, with the listeners. And this is one thing about talk radio that you learn very quickly is it's a very intimate medium. When you're watching television, you're passive. You're just kind of sitting there letting it wash over you. But when you're listening to talk radio, that's someone in your head. That's someone that you get used to. That, like, when me and the crew, when we go out to these different gigs, we go to talk to people, and it's hard to have conversations with them sometime because they already know. They've already heard us talking about it every day, day after day, making this show happen. So as this relationship is developed between myself and so many of the fans out there, it's important to me to maintain transparency and honesty because really, as a host, as an activist, that's my stock in trade. That's what I've got. That's my currency here, is the trust that we develop, that you believe I'm researching this stuff and that I'm working hard to try to convince people and yada, 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 putting on a good show and so forth. So many of you know that we take this show to go report on live events. Many of these live events, things like the Cannabis Cups or the Patients Out of Time conference and so forth. Well, the long story short of it is that we raised money to go to San Francisco to cover this next Cannabis Cup. And then I was told that we wouldn't have that money. There was no money available. That money had to be used for other purposes, and we wouldn't be able to go to San Francisco. And I personally felt that I couldn't then go to my audience, who'd already donated money to get us to San Francisco, and say, sorry, we're not going to San Francisco. I just felt like I couldn't do that. And I don't want to say, you know, blame who thought this or who thought that or what the real issue might have been. It really doesn't matter because I want to move onward. I want to look forward. And I do want to maintain good relationships with all of the fantastic people I've met in marijuana law reform, especially from Normal. But as a personal issue, I couldn't go in front of the audience and break that news. I felt like I would be betraying their trust, that for months I had been saying, donate this money and we'll go to San Francisco and bring you coverage. Donate this money, we'll go to San Francisco, bring you coverage. I couldn't come back then and say, hey, thanks for all the money, and sorry, we're not going to San Francisco. So that is what led me to decide to end doing the network and the show that I'd been doing previously. And let's make this 100% clear. That was my decision. There was nobody at my former employer had any idea I was going to do that. It was a snap, rash, emotional decision on my part. I could have handled it much better. And it was, in many ways, a mistake. Not stopping or not my reaction or feelings, but the way I handled it. It could have been handled in a better way. But that's the way things go sometimes. Sometimes we're emotional people, and sometimes we don't make the best decisions. But I hope to make the best out of this, to continue this show, and to move it forward. And in moving forward, I want to talk about the new sponsor of the show, the National Cannabis Coalition. The National Cannabis Coalition was just formed on 4/20 of this year, and it is headquartered here in Portland, Oregon. The executive director is Anthony Johnson, who, when he was an activist in Missouri, was responsible for putting many marijuana law reform campaigns on the ballot and winning a few of them. And then came out here to Oregon, where he was instrumental in putting together the Measure 74 dispensary campaign and getting that on the ballot. He's been active with Voter Power and Oregon Green Free here, and he's been a friend of mine for a long time here in the cannabis movement. I find him to be very intelligent and articulate and a fantastic representative of the cannabis community. This organization of his, the National Cannabis Coalition, which you can find at nationalcannabiscoalition.com, seems to have the same vision I have had this whole time, ever since that first march back in 2005. And that's the idea that we are a community, and that the issue of marijuana law reform isn't a niche issue. It has been for so long. We've seen so many different groups spring up. Americans for Safe Access, specifically for medical. The Hemp Industries Association, specifically for hemp. The National Cannabis Industries Association, specifically for the cannabis industries, the businessmen. SAFER specifically says that marijuana is safer than alcohol. SSDP, specifically for students who are fighting for sensible drug policy. Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, specifically for cops and law enforcement, and so forth. There's so many of these groups. But I've always thought that the fight for marijuana liberalization and legalization is bigger, and it needs an umbrella. It needs a single issue that comprises all of those facets of marijuana. Because the arguments for hemp can't fully be made unless you address the fact that it's a drug. The arguments for medical can't fully be made unless you address the fact that it's a recreational substance. The arguments for legalization can't be made unless we address the facts of public safety and science. And with National Cannabis Coalition, I feel that they've put together a team of researchers. We've got Harvard economist Jeffrey Miron is working with National Cannabis Coalition right now. And we've got all sorts of other people that we are putting together to make the best team, the best think tank of minds, to come up with how we can form this as one big issue, one issue of civil liberties and civil rights. And the other thing that I'm excited about with National Cannabis Coalition is it's part of a larger organization called the American Victory Coalition. Now, if you've followed me for any length of time, you know that my marijuana activism is just one of the subjects that I'm interested in. I was also a credentialed blogger for a gay and lesbian blog called Pam's House Blend, and I covered the 2008 Democratic National Convention for them. So I've been blogging on issues of sexuality and gay and lesbian issues and transgender issues. And I haven't really had a chance to do that for a long time. Now I will get that opportunity. With American Victory Coalition, I can submit my posts on those issues, on issues of freedom of religion, freedom from religion, civil rights, all sorts of other issues that, while they don't have anything to do with marijuana directly, are actually quite similar to the issue of marijuana. And that's that broader focus I'm talking about. This idea that banning us from using marijuana is a civil liberties issue, just like banning people from getting married if they're gay, just like, you know, banning people from, you know, for whatever reason, like racism, sexism, any sort of bias that's out there. The bias against cannabis consumers is one of those issues. And that's why I'm so excited to be a part of American Victory Coalition and the National Cannabis Coalition. You can get involved with National Cannabis Coalition by going to nationalcannabiscoalition.com. It's going to take a while for me to get used to saying that. NationalCannabisCoalition.com. And you can send money to the National Cannabis Coalition if you believe in our mission like we do, that marijuana is a broad issue that should encompass all of the activist groups that are working for it. And that's what we're going to do here at the Russ Belville Show. We're going to promote all the groups. We've got Normal's Paul Armentano on tomorrow. We've got Danny Danko from High Times on Friday. We've got a speaker from LEAP on Thursday. Coming up in the coming weeks, we'll have people from Students from Sensible Drug Policy, ASA, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, all sorts of groups. If it's about ending prohibition of any drug, we're going to talk about it. Now, we're, of course, in the cannabis community here, and that's our primary focus. But really, all prohibition of drugs must end. All drugs need to be legalized. Now, there's a spectrum of legalization. I mean, aspirin's legal and morphine's legal. All drugs should be somewhere in that scale. Nobody deserves to be in a cage for what they do to themselves or for the fact that they have an addiction. They deserve treatment. They deserve compassion. They deserve help, not incarceration and punishment. So those are some of the things that we're going to be covering here on the Russ Belville Show. So we invite you to join in. Join us at RadicalRuss.com. That's our main blog site where you get the players, the downloads of the podcast, and so forth. Also, you can find us on Facebook. We've got a new Facebook page just for the show, The Russ Belville Show on Facebook. So check that out. My Twitter feed is Radical Russ. You'll get all the latest updates on the show from there. So thanks for joining us here at The Russ Belville Show at RadicalRuss.com and heard on potnet.us. For the rest of our shows, just log on to potnet.us and you can get links. Just about everybody that we had on the previous network has their show back here on Potnet. plus a few others that had gone by the wayside who have come back, and some news shows. So check that out coming up, botnet.us for the full calendar and for all the details. We're going to take it into hour two here, Toker Talk Radio, hang out with the crew, and take your questions at 971-533-7111. Live call-ins start in just a couple of minutes. So for Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John, Wiz Calico and Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.